coming up on this week's mini episode of the Drew Perowit Podcast.
So inflammation is the commonality between just about every health problem we face as a society, from autoimmune conditions to diabetes, heart disease, cancer, digestive problems, fibromyalgia, to things that don't seem inflammatory to the layperson, but is in fact inflammatory, things like anxiety and depression and fatigue and brain fog.
Clean air is a cornerstone for health. We need air in general to survive. We all know that, but we need clean air to get this thrive. It might sound too basic, but honestly, in this industrial age where we are constantly bombarded with toxins, air quality is something we should all be thinking about. Most people at home probably think they're safe from air pollution because they're not outside. But did you know indoor air is usually 2 to 5 times more polluted than the outdoor air? Living 2,000 feet or less from a major highway, having new furniture or carpets or paints that off-gas, owning pets are just a few of the many things that can dramatically affect the quality of the air inside our homes. The toxins found in polluted air can contribute to everything from cardiovascular disease to neurodegeneration. When I found out how toxic the air in my home and office could be, I started using the Air Doctor Professional Air Purifier and saw noticeable improvements in how I felt. Air Doctor has an ultra HEPA filter that's 100 times more effective than any other ordinary HEPA filter, plus a dual action carbon gas trap VOC filter, so it removes 100% of the particles in the air and the vast majority of volatile organic chemical compounds and gases like formaldehyde and other different chemicals that are lurching in our homes. Air Doctor is the best at-home air purifier that I've found because it combats all the different forms of toxins in our air and in our office, and it can be used in any room in the house without any installation. I'm excited to share that right now, Air Doctor is offering my community $300 off. Just go to drhyman.com/filter. That's drhyman, drhyman.com/filter to get this deal today. Make your home your sanctuary, clean up your air and feel better. It's an easy step towards optimizing your health with Air Doctor. Hi everyone, Drew Perowit here. When you look into just about every single problem that we face in the world today, health problem that is, anxiety, depression, fatigue, digestive issues, hormonal imbalances, diabetes, heart disease, and even autoimmune conditions, they are all inflammatory in nature or have inflammatory components to them. But inflammation starts brewing in the body well before these diseases become noticeable, not to mention diagnosable. By the time a health problem is advanced enough to be officially diagnosed, inflammation has typically been causing significant damage to the body and often for years before a diagnosis. In this mini episode, I speak with Dr. Will Cole and Dr. Mark Hyman about why inflammation plagues so many people and how to create awareness to address this issue. We also talk about how to design a personalized for you food and lifestyle plan to alleviate the effects of inflammation and optimize your health. Let's listen in, starting with Dr. Will Cole, a leading functional medicine expert who specializes in clinically investigating underlying factors of chronic disease and customizing health programs for thyroid issues, autoimmune conditions, hormone dysfunction, digestive disorders, and even neurological challenges. Dr. Cole was named one of the top 50 functional medicine and integrative doctors in the nation and is a health expert for Mind Body Green and Goop. Dr. Cole is the author of Ketotarian, The Inflammation Spectrum, and Intuitive Fasting. Let's listen in to this clip. Inflammation is one of those things that people have heard of. They kind of think they know what it means.
Yeah.
Listeners of this podcast have a better sense, but I always like to start off with the obvious because I realize that we have to ask the dumb questions, be willing to learn if we don't know. So break it down. What do you mean when you talk about inflammation?
Yeah, good question. Good place to start. So it is a ambiguous term for many people, or a nebulous. They don't really know specifically what it is. They oftentimes think of maybe achy joints or muscles or maybe a migraine, soreness. People can get behind that. They understand that. But beyond that, it's so much more than that as far as human health. It's so much more than that as it relates to just real life stuff of how millions of people are experiencing and what they're going through. So inflammation is the commonality between just about every health problem we face as a society, from autoimmune conditions to diabetes, heart disease, cancer, digestive problems, fibromyalgia, to things that don't seem inflammatory to the layperson, but is in fact inflammatory. Things like anxiety and depression and fatigue and brain fog. There's a whole field of research that obviously you know about, but many people don't. The cytokine model of cognitive function, basically how inflammation is impacting our brains. And there's an epidemic rise of mental health problems. And we like to separate mental health from physical health, but mental health is physical health. Our brains and our bodies, and we should not treat it as some sort of esoteric, ethereal thing. It is quite physiological. And the main driver of those problems is inflammation. The main commonality is chronic inflammation.
So inflammation can also be, you know, we talk about it in the context of being kind of a negative or a thing that we want to stay away from, but it also can be a good thing. So can you also just lay the groundwork for how inflammation can play a positive role in the body and is actually almost like a defense mechanism?
Absolutely. So inflammation is not inherently bad. It's chronic inflammation that's the problem. So inflammation is a product of our immune system. We need it. We need healthy, balanced inflammation. It fights viruses and bacteria. It keeps our body nice and healthy when it's balanced. It's the Goldilocks principle, right? It's not too high, not too low, but just right. Our gut microbiome, we want it balanced. Our hormones, we want it balanced. Inflammation, we want it balanced. So that is the same law in the body as applied here when it comes to inflammation. The problem is most people in the West, around the world, are struggling with too much inflammation for too long. It's like a forest fire that's burning, low grade burning in perpetuity. It's not good. It's going to create destruction. And there's a lack of balance in people's body. And I think you can see a lot of parallels between what's going on environmentally as far as climate change is concerned, a lack of balance on an environmental level, and what's going on a microcosm level in people's body. They have climate change. They have...
Yeah, the earth is heating up, but our body's also heating up too.
Exactly. And it's disruption of balance on a micro and macro level.
So you write in your book, and I want to connect this to, you've talked about chronic disease and chronic inflammation and how that's the common thread. You know, we have this epidemic of chronic diseases that's been going on now for the past 100-150 years. Mm-hmm. More diseases today are related to chronic diseases where we used to die of not enough nutrition, mm-hmm. bacteria, you know, infections, viruses, that sort of thing. More people are now dying because of heart disease, cancer, which was not how it was, at least 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So you have this quote from your book and you say, by the time a health problem has advanced enough to be officially diagnosed, inflammation has typically already caused significant damage to the body. So you talk about chronic disease and it being inflammation being the common link, but most people haven't gone to their doctor and their doctor has said, hey, you have, they just hear a diagnosis. Hey, mm-hmm. you have cancer. Hey, you have heart disease. Hey, you have dementia. Hey, you have this.
Yeah.
Most people, unless they're working with an integrative doctor or functional medicine doctor, have never been told like, hey, you have inflammation. So what's going on over there?
Yeah, I think we are very reactionary in our modern approach to healthcare. In our conventional setting, we wait until things are really bad for us to give it an ICD-10 code, a diagnosis code, and say, you have a problem. You have, God forbid, diabetes or an autoimmune condition. Well, those things didn't happen overnight. Like you said, it's about 4 to 10 years prior to that diagnosis is when these things started brewing. Hence the title of the book is The Inflammation Spectrum, meaning it exists on a continuum. So from mild grade symptoms like low grade fatigue, background anxiety, say mild, moderate digestive problems on one end of the inflammation spectrum, all the way to the other end of the inflammation spectrum, which is the full blown, it fits the criteria to be diagnosed, it's given a diagnosis code like an autoimmune condition or diabetes or a mental health problem. And then there's everything in between on that continuum. So it's important, no matter where you're at on the inflammation spectrum, no matter what you're going through, to find out what's going on. Check in with yourself first. Like, am I feeling the way that I should feel for optimal health? Because a lot of people are just going about their life and they're not questioning why they feel the way that they do. They're not even realizing maybe the bloating or the constipation or the background anxiety. They think just because it's common, they equate that with normalcy. Ubiquity doesn't necessarily equate with normalcy.
And to piggyback on that, a lot of people feel off. They're not sleeping well. They do have regular bloating. Mm-hmm. They notice that maybe their mood is a little bit different than it was 10 years ago. So they go to the doctor, they go to the physician, and they get a clean bill of health. They walk away and they say, well, everything's normal. I have nothing to tell you. So what's going on in those situations?
So that's a problem. So you're right. Even if people are in tune with their body enough, you're right. That's what happens. They go to their doctor. They know intuitively, hey, they had that reckoning with themselves to say, I have to go get this checked out. And the doctor says, everything's fine. These labs are fine. You're just depressed. Here's an antidepressant.
Or maybe you're not even fully depressed yet.
Yeah.
Just kind of.
Yeah. Or they say things like you're just stressed.
Older.
Yeah. You're just stressed. You're a new mom. You're just getting older. You just need to lose weight. All these sort of reasons. But what they're unintentionally telling their patient is you're a lot like the other people with health problems that make up the reference range that they're being compared to. Because the reference range on standard labs is not looking at optimal health. It's just looking at the population of people who go to labs, the population in the nation. So it's really, and that's not the healthiest bunch of people. So you're being compared to people that with predominant health problems. And then if you're in that range, they're saying everything's fine. Well, that's where functional medicine comes in. And we look at it a little bit more nuanced.
And really a core part of your book is first, as you said earlier, checking in with yourself because you know your body. You know if something's off, you know if something is working, and you know if something's not working. You at least know how you feel and you know what symptoms you're experiencing. Is that the primary way that people can understand before we get into laboratory testing? Is that the first step in understanding where you fit on the inflammation spectrum?
I think so. And I think that's the great part of books and podcasts and online articles is because these are low cost or no cost free things that people can start to take agency on their health and take responsibility for it and understand themselves and empower themselves. So I think that's a good starting point. And I start the book out with the quiz. So that's adapted from questions that I ask patients.
What are some examples of those questions you ask patients?
So we go through the different sections of the inflammation spectrum and the whole concept of inflammation spectrum, I just really put in the book because it's how I saw it in my clinic over the years. So we look at the brain, we look at the hormone system, we look at the detox system, we look at the blood sugar system, we look at the musculoskeletal system, we look at something called polyinflammation, this interconnectedness of the body that, for example, like inflammation in the gut, the second brain can impact brain and neurological inflammation through the gut-brain axis and the vagus nerve. So we're checking in through all the different areas. So for example, there's some little clinical pearls or health history pearls that we see in functional medicine that give us clues as to what labs are the most relevant, which ones aren't so much relevant, like the outer third of your eyebrows thinning. It maybe seems like, why are they asking that from a layperson standpoint? But it's a clinical sign that there may be a thyroid problem that's off, or maybe that someone's craving salty foods. There may be an issue with the HPA axis, the brain adrenal axis, and so on and so forth. We go through all the systems of the body and look at all these health history pearls that I would normally ask a patient that I want patients to, or the reader of the book to ask for themselves to see where am I at on the inflammation spectrum? Because the more these things are off, that's going to be a subclinical sign, you know, through the questionnaire, through the quiz to see, hey, this isn't normal. This is just common for me. And that then inspires the reader, inspires the person to say, let's do something about it.
My next guest and good friend and business partner, Dr. Mark Hyman, is a practicing family physician, an internationally recognized leader, speaker, educator, and advocate in the field of functional medicine. He's also the founder and director of the Ultra Wellness Center, the head of strategy and innovation at the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine, a 14-time New York Times bestselling author, and a board president for clinical affairs for the Institute of Functional Medicine. He is the host of one of the leading health podcasts, The Doctor's Pharmacy, and he's a regular medical contributor to several television shows and networks, including CBS, This Morning, Today, Good Morning America, The View, and you know that whole deal. The rest of them, all the big names are out there. Dr. Hyman and I discuss how to become resilient in terms of food and your biology and how to leverage personalized nutrition for your health and the importance of diversity in your diet for achieving optimal health. Let's talk about food. Is Dr. Hyman perfect with the food that he eats?
No. No, and I don't pretend to be. I don't want people to be. I think, you know, what I think about is, and often I get these questions. So, Dr. Hyman, I can't eat this, I can't eat that. You know, I think is, how do we become resilient in terms of food and our biology? And there's a concept in functional medicine called, you know, metabolic degrees of freedom. You know, you want to be free. You don't want to be restricted. And yes, some people have celiac and they can't eat gluten, or some people have lactose intolerance and they can't eat dairy. And there are certain real things. But what I've learned is that by choosing the right foods within each category of food, and looking at quality as a benchmark, not just, you know, quantity or how much, then you can literally enjoy a wide range of foods and still do fine, right? So for example, I don't like to eat that much flour products because I think it's high glycemic, it's inflammatory, and it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a bad news story. However, I do love pancakes. So what's a guy to do if he loves pancakes? Well, thankfully, there's this new product that's been developed. That's a resurgence of an ancient grain called Himalayan tartary buckwheat, which is super high in protein. It's got over 130 phytochemicals. It's powerful anti-inflammatory superfood. It's a really powerful microbiome supporter. And it's buckwheat flour, right? So it's a special kind of buckwheat. So I made buckwheat pancakes from this special flour, and I had pancakes. So in fact, I had pancakes for dinner. It was a friend of mine. We're like, let's have pancakes for dinner. So I don't think I've ever had pancakes for dinner, but it was really good.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm not perfect, but I will only eat real food. Will I have sugar? Yes. But it's sugar or honey or maple syrup. Will I eat artificial sweeteners? No. Will I have some things like monk fruit or stevia occasionally? Sure. But I don't seek those out, but I just choose real food. You know, if I'm eating any category of food, I choose the best within it. So for example, for dairy, I will choose sheep or goat because I do well with that because it has A2 casein, because it's generally grown not in feedlots and it's grass fed. And so I typically will choose things within each category that are higher quality that still can be treats, but without the downside effects. But you'll never catch me eating Twizzlers or M&Ms or any of that stuff. Like I don't want it. I'm not attracted to it. It's not because I have an ideology about it. It just doesn't look like food to me anymore. You know, it really doesn't. Like I'll walk by a Starbucks case of all these scones and muffins and this and that. And I'm like, I would eat it. I'm not artificially restricting myself based on an idea. My body's like, just says no. Like, I'm like, I don't want that. That doesn't look like food to me. It's like, oh, is that a rock? Am I going to eat that? No, I'm not going to eat a rock. You know, so it feels like that.
Let's break down one of those that you mentioned there, dairy, for example. Look through the food product of dairy through the functional medicine lens for you, right? How much dairy is too much and what kind of happens to you when you have it? And how much dairy is enough that you can enjoy and have it and occasionally, but it might not be something that you're eating, you know, three meals a day.
So do we have an hour podcast for this one? I've done podcasts on this. In fact, I encourage people to listen to the one I did with Dr. David Ludwig. I think it's maybe coming out, if it's out yet. And it was about an article that he wrote with Walter Willett, who these are both top nutrition scientists at Harvard, called Milk and Health. And essentially it blew up all the dogma about milk. Milk is good for your bones. Milk is important for your health. It's a good sports drink. It helps, you know, you lose weight. I mean, there's this whole mythology about milk. It's really propaganda designed by the food industry and the Dairy Council, along with our own government, by the way. You know, like Got Milk, that was a government-sponsored program that promoted dairy, even though there was no evidence to support it. So when I think about dairy, first of all, you know, we are the only species that consumes dairy after weaning. That's not to say we can't consume dairy because we're omnivores and we can consume a wide variety of foods, but the dairy we're eating is not the dairy we ate. So if you're looking at historically, what did we eat? We had cows and sheep and goats, which are foraging on all sorts of wild plants and grazing on grasses, not being fed, you know, corn and soy and grown in feedlots, not pumped full of hormones and antibiotics, not often milk while they're pregnant. And then on top of all that, we bred our cows in this country to have a high production of milk, to be extremely efficient. However, we bred them to produce a certain type of milk, which has high levels of something called A1 casein. It's the type of protein in the dairy. And that particular protein is super inflammatory. It's super problematic for people in terms of digestive issues. It's been linked to cancer. It's been linked to all sorts of different issues with people. And I think that aside from the fact that milk isn't nature's perfect food unless you're a calf, it really has a lot of problems. However, if you find, for example, certain A2 casein cows, which are, you know, maybe more high, heirloom cows, they might produce A2 milk. And sheep and goat produce A2 milk, which is less inflammatory, less digestive issues, better tolerated. And then if you even go further, you can find, you know, like sheep or goat, for example, that are foraging on all sorts of wild plants that then uptake the phytochemicals. For example, goat milk that's from goats that have been eating certain shrubs end up having these high levels of catechins, which are these phytochemicals found in green tea. Like green tea is a super health food, right? I mean, green tea is so great for us. Well, the same levels of these powerful phytochemicals that you find in green tea, the same levels are found in goat milk eating certain shrubs. So you can actually talk about quality, not all goat milk is the same or sheep milk is the same or cow dairy is the same. So I encourage people to, if they're going to pick dairy, make sure you pick A2 casein, sheep or goat. If you're finding, you know, there are A2 cows, and you can actually, I think, Google A2milk.com, and there are dairies that make it. I think certain Guernseys and Jersey cows may have more A2 casein, heirloom cows. So it's available. But I would also say that milk is not necessary for human health, and that it's not necessarily a superfood, that it can be inflammatory for some people. And so I'm very careful about it. And as a functional medicine doctor, you know, I think I have a lot of tricks in my bag, but getting people off gluten and dairy is often the most powerful healing strategy for people. So I encourage people to sort of experiment without it and then try it back and see how you feel.
Yeah, there's also this idea in functional medicine of like, eat like your grandparents ate or your great-grandparents ate. And why I'm bringing that up is that a few years ago, I went on a summit trip with our friends from Summit, Elliot, and all those guys. We went to Kenya. They invited me to go to Kenya. That was where I was originally born. I hadn't been there since I was first born.
Wow.
And we went to go visit a modern day hunter-gatherer tribe. And it was called the Samburu. They're basically cousins of the Maasai. And the Samburu pretty much do not eat during the day. They chew on some twigs, a little bit of berries, but they drink 4 glasses of milk, and they've been living this way now for about 800 to 1,000 years. It's not exactly clear. And when I got there, I was just so fascinated by this is pretty much all they live on is milk. Occasionally, when they don't have milk, they have this practice where they do a little bit of bloodletting for the cow and, you know, drink the blood. And then sometimes on birthdays and holidays and special occasions, weddings, they might have a goat, or in some rare cases, they might slaughter a cow. But I guess in that instance, I was so surprised to find that there was actually a modern day hunter-gatherer tribe that could. But in that instance, when you look at it, they're living on a completely different version of dairy than we're used to. And also, they've been doing that for quite a bit of time, right? So in that instance, when you look at that example, how do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's a great example. And also, you know, you look at the Inuit, they lived on 70% of their diet as fat. So we have a capacity to eat a lot of different foods and survive. And I think when you look at, you know, what they do in these cultures and the Maasai and the and maybe this other tribe is they don't just have the milk. They'll put in like a dozen different spices, or in the meat, they might put in 24 different spices. And what we've learned is that when you combine spices with animal food, it dramatically changes its effect on your biology. It, instead of potentially causing inflammation, it can reduce inflammation. And this is why, for example, in Morocco, they use tons of spices with their meat. They eat a lot of meat, but they don't have the same rates of cancer or other harmful effects that we tend to associate with meat eating. So I think it's a complex story. And I think if you're looking at what probably the cows they're raising in Kenya, they're probably not these Holstein hybridized cows that have all been fertilized by one bull from like North Dakota, you know, basically are so monotonous and bred for volume and yield and not necessarily for nutritional quality. And so when these cows they're eating are foraging on wild plants and they're eating all these phytochemical rich foods, their milk is rich in phytochemicals. Their milk is more nutrient dense. And if they add the spices, they're getting all sorts of other benefits. So I think, you know, it speaks to the fact that it's not, this Russ Kanzer said it very well. He said, it's not the cow, it's the how, right? So it's how is the cow raised? How is it prepared? All those questions. How is the soil that it derived its food from? Is it depleted or is it enriched? You know, so I think we have a lot to learn. And I think if you were to sort of do a breakdown on the biology of the milk that they're consuming, it's probably different than you get when you go buy, you know, some milk in the grocery store.
Absolutely. And I think that's the beautiful thing about your new book, The Pegan Diet, is that there's these big picture principles on different foods, topics, categories, and approaches to food. But then there's also that duality. You know, so much of the diet wars wants to see everything in black and white. Keto is good, or you got to be vegan, or you got to do this. And your new book is all about, look, here's the big picture principles that mostly we can all agree on, but then here's also the duality, which is it depends on your situation, right?
Yeah.
I'd love you to kick off as we get into this topic of pegan diet. Just first tell the listeners, like, where did the term pegan diet come from? And are you upset ever that people mispronounce it and they say pagan diet?
No, I'm not upset. I think it's funny and I correct them. It could be, I guess, the pagan diet. And you know, as a functional medicine doctor, seeing patients for 30 years, doing literally millions of tests and hearing tens of thousands of stories and following people, it's very hard to convince yourself that there is one way that we should all be eating. Keto, paleo, vegan, raw, low carb, low fat, high carb, whatever the latest dietary trend is. And I realized that, you know, it's very much an individual biological issue and an individual preference issue. And so I never force people to do anything, but what I try to help them understand is what's good for them and their body. So I try to get people to not let their ideology overrun their biology. You know, you can say, well, I want to be vegan to save the planet and to be healthy. And it turns out that might not be great for you. And by the way, it might not save the planet the way you think. And we can get into that. But I think there's a lot of effort to try to get rid of these extremes and say, look, what are the things we all agree on? And the origin of the pegan diet was basically, I was on a panel with two friends of mine. One was a vegan cardiologist, the other was a paleo doctor, and they were fighting like cats and dogs. And I was like, man, if you're paleo and you're vegan, I must be pegan. And everybody laughed. And I thought, oh, that was a good joke. and then I went home and I was thinking about it on the plane. I started writing a blog. I was like, wait a minute. What are the principles of veganism? What are the principles of paleo? They're identical, except for one thing, where you get your protein, animals or grains and beans. They both don't want you to eat dairy. They both think we should eat whole foods. We should eat lots of vegetables and fruits and nuts and seeds and good fats. And we should eat in a way that's, you know, good for the planet. I mean, there's a general consensus about the fundamental principles. And whatever health promoting eating people are considering, it's all focused on how do we make ourselves healthier and often how do we make the planet better. And within that construct, you know, what we have in common is far more than there is differences, and certainly far more in common with each other than with the traditional SAD diet, the standard American diet, which is 60% processed food, which is the number one cause of disease and death in the world. So I decided, well, you know, I better just sort of look at what are these foundational principles and what are the things we should really be focusing on. And I think, you know, if we look at, you know, how do you design a diet that's going to be good for you? And good for the planet, and maybe even good for your wallet. One, the overarching concept of the pegan diet is that food is medicine. And unfortunately, I think we're going to share it on our website maybe, but I wrote like a very long dissertation on how food regulates every single system in our body with very specific, you know, this food and this compound regulates this pathway, just to give people an example. I mean, it's infinite, right? But I just try to give people an example of how it affects your gut and your immune system and your mitochondria and your detox system and your hormones and your brain chemistry and even your structural system, how all those are regulated by food and how food is not just calories, but it's information, right? So if food is medicine, then what are the medicines in food? How do we get more of them? And how do we use the right medicines for us in the right moment? So that's really a central concept. And that speaks to the issue of quality. Just like we were talking about dairy, if food is medicine, what kind of instructions does a feedlot cow have with their dairy versus some Kenyan heirloom cow that's eating, you know, wild African shrubs that's, you know, added with 25 spices? Like, that's quite different, right? Milk is milk is milk is not milk, right? Meat is not meat is not meat. Vegetables are not vegetables. And so we have to focus on quality as an underlying principle. So not necessarily how much you eat, but what you eat. And, you know, it's true. Someone pointed out, which I didn't even think about, but there's no chapter on weight loss in the book. There's no, right? And it's like, and the truth is I never tell my patients to lose weight. I never put them on a diet. I never tell them to restrict calories. What I do is teach them how their body works, how to work with it, and how to enhance their body's function using food as medicine and focusing on quality. And the weight loss is just a side effect, right? And getting rid of disease is a side effect. I never say, I'm going to treat your migraines. I'm going to treat your diabetes. I'm going to treat your irritable bowel. I literally just say, this is how your body works. And if you do these things and take out the bad stuff, put in the good stuff, your body will repair and heal. So that was sort of the foundation of the principles of the Pekin diet. The second really core principle, other than food as medicine and quality, is that we're all different. It's about personalized nutrition, personalized medicine, and precision nutrition. And that may mean, you know, one person might do really well on a high-fat keto diet. Another person, it might be deadly. Another person might thrive on a vegan diet. Another person might be really harmful. And unless you listen to your body and pay attention to one, how you feel, but also your lab tests and your biology, you can say, well, I believe in being keto, but then, you know, your lipids go crazy, or you might think, you know, I want to be vegan, but you end up like not having your period and having infertility and losing muscle mass and feeling tired and weak all the time and becoming nutritional depleted because maybe you're not doing it right. Or maybe you are doing it right, and maybe your body just needs something else. So I think we have to sort of personalize nutrition. And there's a whole section in the book, one of the principles is how do you leverage personalized nutrition for your health? And so combining those two ideas, that food is medicine and personalized nutrition, it guides everything else. And then within each category of food, we get to say, okay, if you're going to eat meat, what should you be eating? If you're going to eat vegetables, which one should you be eating? If you're going to eat nuts and seeds, which one should you be eating and why? And then we kind of go down a rabbit hole of what's the perfection, right? Like I would love to eat only, you know, wild elk that's growing in Alaska, it's pristine, it's never touched a pesticide or whatever. So I kind of have to go, you know, what is the sort of next best? Maybe I can get some grass-fed meat from Belcampo Meats or from Mariposa Ranch or from, you know, another place. And so I kind of, you know, use a hierarchy of principles. But the idea is how do you then source the best? And then, of course, it's not about perfection. It's really about doing the best you can. And do I always know the source of my food? Do I always know what I'm eating? No. But I really do my best to farm, shop at farmers markets, to join my community support agriculture, to, you know, really source the food as best I can. And then, you know, you got to stop worrying and just enjoy life.
You've always known the power of polyphenols and, you know, these different pigmented red, blue, different orange, all the different colors that we see, the rainbows of fruits and vegetables that are out there. But mm-hmm. you kind of had an experience recently that made you double down on that category. Talk to us a little bit about that and what you learned from it.
Well, from a functional medicine perspective, you know, for years, we've always focused on phytochemicals in food and their medicinal properties. Curcumin's anti-inflammatory, you know, limonene from the peel of lemons is helpful for phase one detoxification. Cruciferous vegetables have glucosinolates, which increase glutathione. We know that resveratrol and red wine can help with longevity. I mean, we hear about these things all the time. Eat your blueberries because of the proanthocyanidins. And so we've really understood that these are powerful. I think only now we're beginning to realize just how important they are in our general biology. And when most of our diet is absent in these, we become ill over the long term. But what's, I think, a recent discovery is that not only do they work inside your body, but they work inside your gut. And there's certain bugs that just love different polyphenols. And it turns out that, you know, and I had I've talked about it before on the podcast, but I've had a really horrible episode of mold toxicity. I had a bad tooth. I took an antibiotic. I got C. diff, which is a terrible intestinal infection that turned into colitis. And I was, you know, nauseous and in pain and having 20 bloody bowel movements a day. And I mean, I couldn't eat, I lost 30 pounds, it was really bad. And I did my normal functional medicine tricks and it really didn't seem to do much. And I was struggling and I was terrible and I was fearful because I didn't know what was gonna happen. And I started doing some more research through my FOG and discovered a number of different therapies. But one of the things I realized was that there's a very key bacteria in your gut. And this is really how precision nutrition can get, right? There's a critical bacteria in your gut called Akkermansia mucinophilia. And what it does is it puts down a mucus layer protecting you from getting into trouble by letting food and poop through the gut lining. So it's almost like a second barrier, a second skin in the gut. And that bacteria really thrives on green tea, pomegranate, and cranberry, which are these polyphenols. And if it's low, you get autoimmune disease, inflammation, potentially metabolic issues, even cancer. And so by feeding these acromantia the right phytochemicals, it can grow back and it can reset your immune system, reset your gut. And now my gut's better than ever. And it's really about sort of biohacking this sort of science of phytochemicals and your biology. And in the book, in the Pegan Diet book, I talk about how these various chemicals work on every aspect, right, of your system. And for those who are really not familiar with functional medicine, the idea is that, you know, your body's an ecosystem. And then in order to get healthy, you have to create balance in all these systems in your body, in the ecosystem. And it's made up of like little subsystems or networks that are all the things I talked about, your gut, your microbiome, your mitochondria, detox, and so forth, hormones. And so food influences each one of these differently. And it's fascinating. You know, you can look at whether it's, for example, the polyphenols that build acromantia in your gut, or maybe it's the phytochemicals in Himalayan tartary buckwheat that kill the zombie cells from your immune system that age us, or maybe it's the phytochemicals from resveratrol that upregulate their sirtuin genes in the mitochondria to prevent aging, or maybe it's the broccoli that has the glucosinolates that upregulates detoxification, or maybe it's the isoflavonoids in soy that helps regulate hormones, or the lignans and flax seeds that helps with this circulation and recirculation of estrogen in your body. So each area of your body is influenced by different foods in different ways. That's why it's important to eat a wide variety of different foods, which have different phytochemicals. And there's 25,000 of these in the food world that most of us are not getting very much of, especially with our sort of modern hybridized food. And you know, I'm here in Hawaii, and I'm just sort of struck by the wide diversity of foods that I've never eaten. I go to the farmer's market, I'm like, what's that? What's that? Give me one of those. Give me two of those. I'm like, I have this thing on I've never eaten before called an egg fruit. It's like I can show you. It's like right over there on the corner. It's like right there. Where is it? Right there. That's an egg fruit. And it's like, you know, it's just like, I don't even know what it is. I haven't even eaten it yet. I got to wait till it ripens and I'm open it up. And I've kind of gotten in trouble a couple of times. I ate this thing called jackfruit, which was not very good. It's like, give me one of those. So I think we want to eat weird food. We want to eat strange things. And the more we do that, the more we get exposed to a variety of compounds and food that have the potential to continue to heal us.
It seems like such a light intervention, just eating more stuff. And sometimes it feels so light for people that they can forget how effective it is. It kind of reminds me of, Terry Walls, a colleague of yours, friend of mine. She came on the podcast and she was like saying that just simply by, you know, she was taking the supplements, she was eating this sort of autoimmune paleo modified diet, you know, that she turned into her Walls protocol to help her battle MS. And it was kind of working, but actually the two simplest things that took it to the next level, which significantly started reducing her symptoms of progressive MS, was strictly having like 9 cups of vegetables a day, like actually having that much amount of fiber.
And that's 18 servings. That's 18 servings, right? 18 so when servings. You have 5 to 9 servings, you'll have 5 servings of vegetables. This is 18 servings. Yeah. That's what we should be eating. Yeah.
And then she said the other one was the inclusion of organ meats, which is, you know, she was a vegetarian prior to that, I believe. And yeah. She had not really been including those. And those two things alone, so simple, not some crazy supplement or medication or anything like that. Those two simple things truly showed her that food is the medicine that we all really need. What you choose to put on your plate is one of the most important health interventions you make. Food not only affects our likelihood of disease, but it can lengthen our lives, change our mood, and even affect the DNA's expression. By approaching disease with a holistic perspective, of which food is significantly a vital part, we can tackle the root causes of disease and truly live well. Thank you for tuning in to this week's mini episode of the Drew Perrott Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back next week with another one.